that you bought something or you spent some money and you were like, that was a really good decision? For me, that was this week. I replaced our electric toothbrushes, and it's been a good week. I've all week been thinking that was a really good decision, and I thought I knew you'd be curious, so I brought in one of our toothbrushes that I was replacing. So it is over 6 years old. It is actually mouldy. It smells like when you're brushing your teeth, you can smell the mouldy toothbrush, and it leaves that really disgusting residue whenever you put it down. So that was a really good decision. But I know it's true for me, maybe it's true for you, that not that often do I buy something or do I spend money, and I feel really confident that was a good decision. It's really hard, isn't it, to decide how to spend our money. Perhaps you find it much easier to think about the last time you bought something and you're wondering if maybe you shouldn't. Perhaps you're thinking right now of the one thing that you've bought that you never want anyone else to know you've bought. Perhaps if you weren't, you are now. Great, so we're going to be thinking about money this morning. I don't know all of you super well, so I'll just tell you a bit about myself before we get going. I'm married to Tom. We have one daughter who's just over a year old called Nia. They're together somewhere else this morning. I'm self-employed. I work 3 days a week doing market research alongside sort of side hustle as a struggling artist. And between Tom and myself, we've been made redundant 4 times from our jobs over a 6-year marriage. I was made redundant when I was about 6 weeks pregnant, and Tom was last made redundant when Nia was 4 months old. He actually just started a new job just over a month ago after being out of work for 8 months, hence why we just bought the toothbrushes. I say all this because I'm going to be talking a bit this morning about how we as followers of Jesus should think about our expendable income. Tom has worked for tech startups at various points, and if anyone knows anything about that industry, that means there have been moments where we have felt pretty well off. But I'm aware that there are some here this morning who will not feel like they've got expendable money to think about. So I give all that background just to say that I do know what it feels like, and I hope that wherever you're at, kind of however you feel financially right now, I hope this morning will still be useful. It's kind of been talked about a bit, and I'm aware that at CCB recently we've done quite a few talks on and around money, so I'm going to try and cover some perhaps slightly different areas that perhaps we've just not had sort of time to go into recently in other talks that we've had. And I am going to try and get quite practical, but with that, there must come many caveats. Money is really personal. The Bible is really, really clear about what we should do with our money in some regards. But in others, much of it is down to wisdom. And we have each been shaped by our upbringings, our circumstances, our cultures. So I'm going to be sharing some practical outworkings about things that I've thought about, and I hope to give you things to think about and to go away and to chew over, even if you personally would work things out quite differently. And just finally, there is so much that we could cover this morning, and I am going to try and cover quite a lot. But that means that undoubtedly I won't do everything justice. But if there is one thing that I hope you take away from this morning, it is this: that your money is not your own. 1 Chronicles 29:11 says, "Yours, Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the majesty and the splendor. for everything in heaven and on earth is yours. Your money is not your own. A few years ago, Tom and I thought we were going to buy a flat, but that ended up falling through for various reasons. And just over a year ago, we moved into our new rented flat in Tooting. And Tom was talking to a friend at church about this. They were asking about the move. And Tom said something along the lines of, like, yeah, we've moved, but, you know, we're renting. Once again, our money's just going out to our landlord. And the friend replied so helpfully, oh, well, it's all God's money anyway. And she wasn't being facetious or pedantic. It was a genuine and kind reminder that at the end of the day, whatever money we have or don't have, gain or lose, it all belongs to the Lord. It all comes from him and it is all his. We have to start there. We have to get our heads and our hearts around that. But as I said, we are going to be thinking about what we should do with our money. At church recently, we thought about the woman in Luke who gave away her last two pennies. Andy was very helpfully clear that Luke gives no caveats to this God-glorifying, unreserved generosity. So how do we hold passages like that in tension with passages in the Bible that talk about being good stewards, about living responsibly, not being a burden, that talk about looking after our households and the poor? It's really hard. I certainly don't have all the answers. But before we look at his word, let's just pray again and ask God for his wisdom. Father, thank you that you are with us this morning. Thank you that you you speak through your word, that you speak by your spirit. Please this morning, Lord, would you speak to us? Would you help us to apply the words that I'm going to say to our lives and to our hearts? And would we leave changed? And help us to live wholeheartedly for you, knowing that everything is yours. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
We're going to pop into three passages this morning. Proverbs 31, verses 10 to 31, 1 Timothy 6, and 1 Thessalonians 2, verses 8 to 9. And we're going to see three things. Your money is not your own. So use your money for your household, use your money for others, and use your money for the gospel. Firstly, we're going to look at your money is not your own, so use your money for your household. Looking at Proverbs 31, and Jules, you can read that first.
A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it's still night. She provides food for her family and portions for her servants. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them, and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arrive and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Honour her for all that her hands have done, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate.
Thanks, George. I was really cautious about using this passage. I'm aware if you're anything like me, it might make a lot of you cringe. That's certainly how I used to feel about it. But I am using it. I really think it would be an oversight and a shame not to look at it together. This is a passage from the end of Proverbs, titled, in many of your Bibles, it might be titled, The Wife of Noble Character. And it depicts a seemingly perfect woman living a seemingly perfect life. Cue eye roll. But perhaps it might be helpful to know that this is not a description of necessarily a real woman. This is actually an acrostic poem. It's designed to be memorable, designed to teach a man what perhaps to look for in a potential wife. It is the personification of wisdom and godliness. So if she feels unattainable or unrealistic, that's okay. This isn't meant to be like looking at an Instagram influencer. It's actually not meant to make you feel bad about yourself. But it is useful for us, and God has things to teach us from this passage. There is an idea that has been perpetuated throughout history, since ancient Greco-Roman times, since Aristotle argued that women were incomplete men, an idea that I think women today are told to be angry about, that women do not belong in places of business, that women do not need to concern themselves with financial matters, investments, or decisions, that it is okay to be ignorant or bury our heads in the sand. It is an accepted norm for women to lack financial confidence. That it would be unfeminine or even worse, emasculating, for women to be entrepreneurial, business-minded, and make financial decisions. Well, we see here in Proverbs 31 that is not a biblical idea. The Proverbs 31 woman is, if you look down with me and flip through as I call them out, in verse 13, she's hardworking. Verse 14, she's resourceful. Verse 15, she's fair, dividing up these portions. And crucially, we see in verse 15 that she's helped. She has female servants. Verse 16, she's a businesswoman. Verse 17, she's physically strong. Verse 18, she's a provider. Verse 19, the language used there tells us that she was really skillful in her work. In verses 21 and 22, we see that she is wealthy with these fine materials that she has, the purple linen. But verse 20, we see that she is generous. She opens her arms to the poor. We see that she's entrepreneurial, verse 24. And she is responsible, verse 27. Finally, there are several examples in this passage of this woman being prepared for the future. Verse 16, she buys a vineyard, which would not have necessarily been profitable straight away, but down the line. Verse 18, she's clearly stored up oil so that her lamp will not go out at night. Verse 21, she is prepared for different weather and different seasons. I think this is really helpful as Christians. We try and weigh up the wisdom of not storing up our treasure on earth in savings and giving generally, with the wisdom of saving and being prepared for the future and looking after those in our care. I'm not going to be prescriptive in this at all, but I do think it shows us that it is not ungodly to be proportionately prepared for the future responsibilities we may have. In verse 25, we see that this woman is clothed in strength and dignity and laughs at the days to come. Primarily, this is rooted in her fear of the Lord and her trust in him. But I also think that in the wisdom that he has given her, she is prepared for cold winters, and therefore she's unafraid. So whether you do paid work or not, it is a biblical principle for us as women to be thought through in the way we use our money, to make good decisions, to use it wisely, and take care of those who live in our households. This might be our husband and children. It might mean parents who are or will one day be in our care. It might mean employees or those we manage in a work context. You know, we saw her caring for her female servants. I'm going to make a bold guess that you probably don't have many female servants living with you currently. But there might be those that we are responsible for in a work context. And we see that all of this wisdom, when it comes to money and all the other matters that I touched on in this passage, it comes from fearing the Lord in verse 30. The Proverbs 31 woman makes savvy, wise, profitable decisions with the resources she has, but she does not do it for her own benefit, her own glory. She does it so that she is well prepared to look after those in her care and that ultimately God might be glorified. So in your tables or with the person next to you, could you discuss these three questions? What is our natural reaction to thinking about money and finances? Is there anything that surprised us in this passage? And what impact do you think fearing the Lord has on the woman in this passage? We're just going to take a couple of minutes to do that. Great, I'm going to start to close in. Sorry if I'm cutting into conversations, but remember where you got to and pick them up later. Great, I'm going to come on to our second point, which is probably where we're going to spend most time this morning. Secondly, your money is not your own, so use your money for others. We're going to look at 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 to 10 and 7 to 19. Jenny, do you read that?
Yeah. So it starts in verse 6. But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap, and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. And then it's verse 17. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life.
Thanks, Jenny. So, in this passage, at the start, Paul gives a really clear warning against pursuing money. We are fed the lie all the time that more money will lead to more happiness. But it is a lie. We are told here that chasing money will lead to being trapped by temptations, forever unsatisfied, and could even lead to walking away from Christ. Perhaps some of us can even think of examples where we have seen that process happen to people we care about. Christians are called instead to pursue contentment, along with, in verse 11, righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. Now, this doesn't mean that as Christians, we can't pursue a career that will lead to being paid lots. But it is important to ask ourselves, with each promotion or pay rise on offer, what is it that our heart is really longing for? Are we excited to use the gifts that God has given us to glorify Him and serve others? Or do we really just want more money and more stuff? We see in verse 8 that Paul is not telling Christians to seek a life of abject poverty. We need food and clothes. But we should run from the constant influence that is telling us that we need more. More money, more stuff. It is a trap. It will not satisfy. We can't take any of it with us when Jesus returns or calls us home. Let's look at verses 17 to 19. When I read verse 17, I expected to say, command those who are rich to give it all away. But instead, Paul instructs them not to be arrogant and not to put their hope in their wealth. As verse 7 reminds us, it is just stuff. It is a trap. It will not satisfy. And we can't take any of it with us when Jesus returns or calls us home. Again, look at verse 17. It is uncertain. Our financial circumstances can change so quickly. We just have to look at the financial crash of 2008, or even just over a week ago, war broke out in the Middle East and our fuel prices are suddenly much higher. Some of us might suddenly be feeling the financial stress of that. Instead, Paul says, put your hope in God. He, again, verse 17, he richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. This suggests that enjoyment in the Christian life is allowed. But what does it look like to enjoy everything that God has given us in light of verse 11? Pursuing righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. I think verse 18 has the answer. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. If you have money, if you are rich in the present world, as many of us are comparatively, if you are in a position where you have expendable income, firstly, that's great. What a blessing and a gift from the Lord. Secondly, look carefully at how you are using your money. Does it match up with the instructions laid out in verse 18? Are you doing good? Are you being rich in good deeds? Are you generous? Are you willing to share? There are loads of different ways that we could apply this to our lives. We've got biblical examples like Lydia in Philippians. One of the first converts in the Philippian church. She was a very wealthy woman. She had a large house that she hosted the church in. We see there are wealthy women in Luke who funded Jesus' ministry. This could look like just having people over to your home and sharing a meal. It really doesn't have to be fancy or pretty. This could look like taking friends on holiday with you who perhaps couldn't afford to go by themselves or couldn't afford to go to this nicer place by themselves, maybe. I wonder if you've ever thought about people who are in ministry, particularly when they have to sort of account for all their money comes from particular gifts from people, perhaps people doing kind of ministry traineeships or that sort of thing. They can feel really awkward about spending any money on sort of fun things or enjoyment things because they feel like they've got to tell everyone exactly what they're spending the money on. So I wonder if you've ever considered giving someone in that sort of position a gift marked particularly for enjoyment. Use this money to go with people to the pub after church or the cinema, whatever it might be. In the process of preparing for this talk, I heard a story of one person who was really anxious about going to a sports social with their team because they knew that they couldn't really afford to buy everyone around, which was the thing that everyone did. So their friend said, well, I'll give you the money for that. Go to your sports social. Let me take care of that for you. I referred to the fact that Tom's been at work for a while, or was out of work for a while. I was having a conversation with a friend at church, and I said to him, you know, this is when the redundancy payout is going to run out. At that point, you know, Tom and I will need to have some hard conversations, make some difficult decisions about how long we can afford to stay in London. And as quick as anything, he said, oh, I'd bankroll you before that happens. And he really meant it. And just a final thought, I wonder if you could, on top of your sort of regular giving, the money that you give to church and other causes, you could set money aside each month so that you are prepared to be generous. You've got money saved up that if someone is in need or shares something with you, you're able to offer them some money towards whatever it might be around at sports social. I also just want to give a note on endurance. In verse 11 we see endurance. This is just a bit of application that I thought about. As I said before, you might work things out very differently, but the week that Tom was made redundant last time was the week that he signed up to the tutoring membership for the gym and the Lido. And similarly, this time round, I've kept going to exercise classes. Some people might argue that that is a foolish use of money. But for us, we knew that exercise was really important. It was a really big help and a huge blessing when it came to our mental health, something that we knew can suffer when looking for jobs. So for us, it was a priority. We had learned from past mistakes where we just spent all day indoors applying for jobs the whole time and just ended up feeling really low. And that's just something to think about. Finally, it is really hard to work these things out on your own. Is there a friend who you could invite to know what you use your money for and on, and who you could give permission to challenge you on stuff? We've been really helped by that, and maybe you will be too. Okay, it's time for some more discussion questions. Where do you most see or feel the pull to pursue more and more stuff? What most helps you to pursue contentment? And can you remember a time when a Christian friend shared something with you? Bless you in that way. I'll give you a few minutes. Okay, I'm going to pull us back together one more time. When you're ready. Sorry to cut across conversations again, but we'll have one more chance to chat at the end. So let's come on to our third and final and brief point. Your money is not your own, so use your money for the gospel. We're going to look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 8 to 9. I'll read it for us. Because we loved you so much, we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. Surely you remember, brothers and sisters, our toil and hardship. We worked night and day in order not to be a burden to anyone while we preached the gospel of God to you. We see in these verses that Paul worked. And he worked in order to earn money. And he earned money in order to not be a burden, in order to in no way hinder his mission in sharing the good news of Jesus with the Thessalonians. We have talked a lot in recent weeks about how, as Christians, we should use our money to formally support Christian ministry. And we can do that by supporting our church, CCB, by supporting ministry workers directly. We've already talked about that a little bit. by supporting Christian charities both here and overseas. So again, what I'm talking about is not money, is money in a slightly separate category to this. What I'm talking about should not take away from the money that we sort of formally give in this way, from the 10% or whatever it might be that we set aside to formally support these ministries. Again, what I'm talking about is what we might call expendable income, how we use our money well day to day. It can be really difficult to work out what is a good use of our money. So this is hopefully just another useful lens for that discernment process. Am I using my money in order to love people, to not be a burden to them, in order that I might share the gospel, the good news of Jesus, with them? Again, there are so many ways in which this could be worked out. New mums with babies in Balham like to go for brunch a lot. Tom and I joined antenatal classes before Nia was born locally because it was a chance to get to know some new people outside of church. And we, in the end, decided to rejig our budget a bit in order that I could afford to go to some of these brunches and get to know these other mums. Now, I won't pretend that eating lots of brunch over the last year has been any sort of hardship. But I do believe that it was significant for helping me to become proper friends with some of these women, some of whom have since come along to Boffers and who have heard the gospel proclaimed, and who I am praying might one day come along to church, who I'm praying might one day come to know Jesus themselves. Earlier, I spoke about someone who gave their friend money so that they could afford to buy a round at a sports team social. I think that was an important thing to do in order so that they could go and not be a burden to their teammates and build relationships with them. This could look like saving to buy or buying a place locally to our church, because that means being able to commit long term to CCB and invest in spreading the gospel here. It could mean being intentional about becoming regulars at local businesses, whether that's cafes, hairdressers or dry cleaners, so that you might build relationships with the people who work there and be bold for the gospel. So let's wrap up. Your money is not your own. It is the Lord's. He gives us so many blessings, and some of them come through what money enables us to have or do. Enjoy these blessings. Give God the glory for them. But your money is not your own to be enjoyed by you alone. Use your money for your household. Use your money for others. Use your money for the gospel. Let's just finish by, I'm going to read 1 Timothy 6, verses 17 to 19 again. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. Finally, on your tables or with the person next to you, who is someone you love, who you share life with, and who you would love to see come to know Jesus? What is something they love or that you love to do together? And then why don't you just finish by praying for them together?